I would say I'm not shy about holding things back or slowing things down in order to feel like it's going to happen organically and easily and sustainably. So it's sort of short-term pain for long-term gain is the theory. You know, if you have a really talented horse and rider that just aren't quite there yet, it's better that they spend a summer jumping smaller and getting better at that, you know, not just from a training perspective, but also the fitness, to say that by the end of 3 more months, they're going to be ready to make several more steps up the ladder and be able to do it in a way that the jumps never feel like they're that difficult.
Welcome to the Equine Body Talks podcast. We'll be diving into the equine industry from the lens of a body worker, talking to other equine professionals and discussing scenarios around soft tissue work for all equine athletes. I'm Kim Krebs, your host. I've been working for over 2 decades in this industry as a loper, barn manager, and body worker. With the many horses I've worked with in all of these capacities, it has driven me to want to continually find out the why and the hows of equine biomechanics, health, and performance. My mentor and one of our industry's leaders, Tina Watkins of In-Hand Equine Therapy, will also be sharing hosting duties with me. Tina has been an equestrian her entire life and has dedicated the last 25 years to bringing bodywork forward as a professional career through her business, as well as education and teaching of future and current bodyworkers. This podcast is dedicated to opening the conversation around equine wellness, diving deeper into the whole body approach for equine performance horses. We're back into our discipline focus feature this week with the sport of show jumping. Not for the faint of heart, this is likely one of the most recognizable sports in the equestrian world. The majority of people who have never even seen a live horse will likely, if asked to think about horseback riding, have a vision of a horse soaring through the air, rider on its back, as it clears a jump. It's fast, it has elements of danger, it's graceful, and it's inspiring to see the trust between horse and rider. But what does it take to gallop these horses around huge arenas with jumps that can be upwards of 5 foot plus and widths of over 6 feet? If you ask me, nerves of steel. I'm not a speed demon by any means, but that young girl in me can't help but have dreams of sailing through the air on the back of a horse. In today's episode, we sat down with Alex and Holly Grayton of Grayton Farms. Alex started his riding at a young age in the Calgary area. He trained with celebrated Alberta horseman Frank Selinger for several years as he gained experience training young horses and riding his first Grand Prix classes. He spent a year training with top American rider Kyle King before immersing in the Millerbrook farm system, riding with Canadian legend Ian Miller. During his time there, the focus on training and preparation was solidified as a major component of Alex's philosophy. It was also through Ian that Alex met Emil and Paul Hendricks, world-renowned Dutch horsemen, who continue to be partners and mentors. Most recently, he has trained with legendary horseman and coach George Morris since 2016. Over the past years, Alex has developed horses into elite horses for sport, including a National Talent Squad Finals title, National Young Horse Champion, Hunter Champions, and numerous Grand Prix and international victories. Alex has trained riders of all levels, from entering their first horse show to winning Talent Squad Finals, FEI Children's Finals, International Grand Prix, and every spot in between. His competitive aspirations include representing Team Canada and Nations Cup, and championship competitions, as well as continuing to develop and produce high-performance horses. His wife Holly is herself an avid competitor with her own horses at top level in the FEI and Grand Prix rings. She works side-by-side with Alex to promote their company, Grayton Farms. In addition to operating her own business called Great Designs, which offers private photography at shows, portrait and studio shoots, as well as print media and website design. Holly as well started her riding career at a young age in the Calgary area, and after graduation found work with Canadian Olympic rider Jonathan Aslin, and then at Teradan Farms with Dr. Dan French and with mentors Jolie Mann and Andrew Moore. It is through them that she would learn not only how to start young horses, but also the fundamentals of sport and how the two paths intersect. It is at this point that Holly and Alex's paths merged, and she as well learned from Kyle King, Ian Miller and the Miller family, Paul Balasik, Emil Hendricks, George Morris, and many more. So let's tune in as we sat down with them both to discuss the sport of show jumping.
Both Holly and Alex have shown at the FEI level. Alex has shown at the international level. And I've worked for these guys for over 20 years, so I'm really excited to be able to look at some insights into show jumping. So thank you both so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. I think show jumping for sure is probably one of the most universal equine disciplines, and this being such an international podcast, it's one that most people are going to be familiar with for the most part, but we are going to dive into a few other aspects that you maybe don't know about as a listener that Alex and Holly in their international experience are going to be able to share with us. So again, really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I think we should start this podcast with you guys. Like Kim mentioned, lots of people know about show jumping and what happens and, you know, that you guys are leaping over very tall sticks in the air. But I think the big thing that I appreciate about you guys is your horsemanship aspect of your sport. So if we could we just talk a little bit about how important you think it is for you guys to actually recognize what's happening with the athletes in front of you?
It's a good question. I think it's important that somebody recognizes that. I think it would be preferable if that's the rider. And the reason I say that is because I think this sport is for amateurs, juniors, kids, adults, professionals, and everywhere in between. And so the expectation of a child knowing everything there is to know about their equine athlete is not realistic. Whereas I think a professional rider should and probably does know basically everything there is to know about the horse. So the gap that needs to be filled is the team around you. And so ultimately, while it's an individual sport, it's a team that really puts the whole thing together. So I think that's sort of the best way I could answer that, is that somebody somewhere all along the way in your team needs to really have the awareness and the knowledge to be able to keep the horses healthy, happy, and able to do their jobs.
I think that's a really good point, because sometimes as a rider, you can get so focused on the things you're working on with that horse that the whole picture isn't in your view at that moment. So having a great team around you is really important.
To finish my thought on that too, I think while I'm not trying to let junior, amateur, and kids off the hook and say, well, they don't need to, I'm just saying that they don't know it yet. And so the exercise should really be that we're teaching everybody how to do that, or what to know or what to look out for. Just recognizing that not everybody knows it all yet.
Yeah, and I think that's such a great point that you bring up. And I think that's where we were going with our question, in that, you know, so many people think that their job is to get on and ride the horse, and they just forget that there is so much more to sport than actually sitting on the horse and going in the ring.
100%.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's, we talk often about, you know, we only ask the horses for 1 hour a day for training and they can pay attention and it's not so hard and blah, blah, blah. But we can turn that thing around too and say, we are only asking them to do the sport for a brief moment of the day, but it's everything leading up to that moment that's going to dictate your success. It's not whatever magic you're going to pull out in that second. It's everything leading up to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point. And so that'll take us right into, what would a typical show jumping day look like for one of you guys as sport horses?
At home, what we really like to do is plan backwards, more or less. We like to have an idea about what it is we're getting ready for and work backwards from there. So if, you know, we have a show coming up in a couple of weeks, we will be already planning sort of our last school, the last day that we would jump, our travel plans for when we're going to get to the horse show, all of that stuff. And then that sort of fills in the gaps about what it is you might do on any given day to be able to set up for all of those things. So on an average day when we're not going to jump, the horses get fed early in the morning. We clean the stalls. Some might turn out, some might stay in to be ridden first, depending on what the plan is. And they would have a nice workout. We're big believers in turnout, so we try to have the horses turned out for as long as possible each day, provided that they're sane about it, and they will be healthy. And we ride them probably for 45 minutes to an hour, 45 minutes of work, and the rest is a lot of walking. The grooming is a huge part of it. We try to make sure that we groom them properly, both so that they look good, but also to get them warmed up properly. We have a little bit of awareness about their condition and state of mind as you're getting them ready. There may be some physiotherapy involved. They get fed 4 times a day normally. Yeah, I think that sort of sums up a normal day. By the end of the day, around 4 o'clock is sort of when things wind up, and then night check happens later.
I love the point that you made about the grooming, because that is an area I think so many people neglect. They don't pay enough attention. And not only is it paying attention in terms of making sure your horse doesn't have any cuts or bumps or bruises or funguses or anything to that nature that might interfere with their ability to perform, but we talk about this often with our clients, in that you can help with the massage itself in doing a really good curry. And if you are paying attention, just like you're saying, it's really an integral part of a warm-up, not just a good brush.
Absolutely. We have had a lot of really good people in our sort of circle, if you will, grooms that have worked for us that have been really huge proponents and have been taking the charge on to do that sort of thing. And, you know, they're wearing out curry combs and stuff like that because they are big believers in it themselves. And so I couldn't state that too clearly. It's huge.
Yeah.
And I think just to expand on what Alex said about their state of mind also, you know, we really try and have a small group of people working on the horses every day, so they're very familiar with them. You know, a lot of people will just get a horse ready and not think too much about it. And if you know the horse well, you'll know when you're currying them if they're not normally sore in their back, or you'll know when you go to put the saddle on if they, you know, they normally don't make a face when you come at them with the saddle. Or, you know, the people who do sort of the pre-ride stretches for them on the regular and know how they react to it. I think also knowing their body condition, you know, horses can lose and gain weight so quickly that if you have different people seeing them every day, that stuff gets missed and slides by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's so important, because I think it's so easy for people to think that things have just gotten normal, or, oh, this horse is just now making a face when I go to put the saddle on. Oh, he must be cranky that day. I love the points that you're both making about actually recognizing what this horse is trying to tell us. So with that, Holly, you mentioned the saddle. So why don't we go straight into that? What do you guys feel is the importance of tack fit? Maybe it's we'll expand just from saddle into all of the tack, if you guys have a few little tips for us. And how much weight do you put on the importance of that in your program?
For us, it's huge. We've ridden in many, many saddles over the years, and although we love the saddles that we ride in now, I think the most important part is that your saddle is comfortable for your horse and that you are comfortable in your saddle. Mm-hmm. I think it maybe not equally, but if your saddle doesn't fit your rider and your rider can't perform their best, that's detrimental to the performance as well. And so I think, but it's not just your saddle. I think it's important that your girth fits well. It doesn't pinch. I think it's important that the bridle fits well and isn't pulling on their ears, or have a noseband that underneath jabs in and creates a rub. And that always, again, circles back to the grooming. You know, you're paying attention to all those small things. And even some horses that, you know, if you're around them enough, you know, they'll get a girth rub if you don't stretch their legs after you do up their girth, or things, just small things that can be avoided by knowing your horse as well.
I think I had just a couple thoughts about the saddle, which is, I think there's probably 3 major reasons that it's crucial. One is that if the saddle doesn't fit, it's uncomfortable for the horse. If the saddle isn't balanced right, then the rider is going to be compromised in their position and then therefore ineffective. And then the last piece is that I think if you have the belief that the horses change over time, you need to be able to do something about that. And if your saddle doesn't allow for that, then you're behind the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very good point there. So how do you guys set up a conditioning program for a horse? So let's say a horse comes into your program, and I know, Alex, you said earlier, I made a little note here on my sheet that you guys like to work backwards. But let's say somebody brings a horse into you, how would you evaluate their condition just so that you could decide where to start?
Probably the first thing, the first ride would very much be an assessment, sort of a ride. And you would have an idea, so you'd have some information about what the horse has theoretically been doing. And in the first ride, you'd get the feeling of if that seems possible or not, for lack of a better way to say it. I would be riding the horse and think to myself, I don't feel at all ready to jump 140 with this horse. That seems far-fetched to me.
Right.
And then you try to sort of parse out the information about why that might be. Maybe it's conditioning. Maybe it's overall strength. Maybe it's training. Maybe it's equipment. Maybe, you know, who knows? But conditioning is definitely one of those things. And if that is one of them, one of the reasons that you would feel like its supposed job currently or what it would like to get ready for is far away, then you would start to attack that issue. There's no harm in being having too good of a condition for the job you're about to do. There is a potential risk in getting to that point and overexertion and all of these things. But, you know, if your horse is fit enough to go to the Olympics and you're not going to the Olympics, then there's no harm. You just aren't going to need it all. And so why stop short of proper conditioning if you don't have to? And as I mentioned there, though, the caveat is that in getting a horse that fit, you can still have training injuries. You can have the best of intentions and still sometimes things happen. So being able to go at it in an organized and thoughtful manner is certainly the key. And then ways to do that would, you know, we have varied that, how we would get a horse to be that fit. And normally it starts pretty slow, is trying to make small incremental changes over the first little bit. And then maybe next thing you know, you can do add a treadmill program into their life or a second ride every day, or maybe you need to jump small jumps more often. Depends on where the conditioning is lacking, but those are sort of all options that we would have at our disposal.
Right. And I love that you said that every horse is an individual, because I think that's something that gets missed quite a bit. People want a cookie cutter recipe idea of how to get a horse ready for sport. And I love that you talk about the individual. I know that you guys have had multitudes of horses through your program because of how great of a job you do. Could you give us maybe two case studies of horses that came into you where, you know, you were told that they were ready for a job, and just give us, you know, just short, but a little bit of a rundown of how you had to step back and reevaluate them and then, you know, get them forward into sport?
Well, I think one of the blessings and the curses in our sport is the horses can be so fantastically athletic that, you know, you can survive a lot and get a lot done just because of their talent, and it doesn't build for longevity. So I think probably maybe not a specific case, but, you know, you get a young horse in that's an extraordinary jumper and they've been jumping at the height of their age. And the bottom line is they're either not fit enough, but I think fit is maybe a bit too general of a word, in the sense that they don't carry themselves correctly and they don't have the necessary parts of the recipe to put the whole course together just because they're an extraordinary athlete. And I think that can get easily and probably without thought exploited in our sport. So I would say, just from watching Alex with horses like that come in, he so quickly identifies what is lacking in their education and posture and starts there, you know. And maybe it's shorter rides with better posture, or it's not necessarily fitness as you think of it in the conventional way.
I think that's a good one. A good way to say that is that it is really case by case. Each one is going to be an individual for sure. But I would say I'm not shy about holding things back or slowing things down in order to feel like it's going to happen organically and easily and sustainably. So it's sort of short-term pain for long-term gain is the theory. You know, if you have a really talented horse and rider that just aren't quite there yet, it's better that they spend a summer jumping smaller and getting better at that, you know, not just from a training perspective, but also the fitness, to say that by the end of 3 more months, they're going to be ready to make several more steps up the ladder and be able to do it in a way that the jumps never feel like they're that difficult. And that sort of bleeds into a bit of a training philosophy, which is that you just never want the jumps to feel like they're the hardest part of the horse's day. And that's a function of a lot of things. And fitness and conditioning is, of course, one of them. Also training, making sure that they're trained well enough. But if they are exerting themselves because they have a huge heart at every jump, this is a short lifespan. Right.
Yeah. One of the things that really sticks in my mind whenever I think of show jumping, of course, is watching either the Olympics or here in Canada, being able to watch the events at Spruce Meadows and just being so enamored and enthralled with them. Because not only is a jumping horse having to have, like you mentioned, Holly, the athleticism and the strength to get over these large jumps, but on top of that, they need to have also the airway capacity to be able to gallop and get through these courses. And some of the courses, depending on the level that you're at, can be quite lengthy. So can you maybe talk to that a little bit in terms of the courses themselves and what it is that you are building these horses up towards?
Yeah, I think, being from Calgary, Spruce Meadows is in our backyard, and Spruce Meadows hosts some of the largest rings there is in our sport. Even at a lower level, they're big fields. And I know from watching Alex get our horses ready to go there, Alex generally rides big horses because he's a tall guy. And the bigger the horse, the harder it is to keep them at top fitness. And so, as he said before, he often works backwards from an event that we're going to. So if summer series is the goal, he'll plan a show at Thunderbird before, because that's also a large field. So you have a good gauge of where you're at. He'll also be, for Calgary, we get into summer late in the year. So he has to think about doing 2 rides a day. He has to think about doing stuff like that to build the fitness when we're still in our indoor or we're battling the short days of winter.
Like you'd mentioned, Holly, how some of them here in Spruce are so large, but to give people a perspective of, what is the size that you would actually be asking those horses to compete on?
Oh yeah, well, at Spruce Meadows, the field, I think it's 4 football fields big. I mean, it's really big, and you go up and down it a few times. Spruce Meadows is also common has to have the derbies. So they, you're going up and down different grades. I think it's underestimated sometimes when we go from an all-weather footing flat ring to a grass field that has a grade to it, just the different thing that requires. Mm-hmm. So I know for us, we're constantly trying to vary the footing that they're on. We go over to friends' places and use their hills. We try to do a lot of different things like that to get them ready. And I think as equal to working them hard is rest. Horses are, they're here because we asked them to be, not because they woke up and said they wanted to be a show jumper.
Yeah.
So it's also important that we manage their mental well-being, that they are always enjoying their sport as well.
Yeah, that's a really key point. I agree.
Yeah, totally. And so could you guys tell us a little bit about what are some of the common injuries that would come up in the sport of show jumping and maybe some of the injuries that you guys have seen?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of common ones. These are big horses that are landing from big jumps. So you have a big concussion that happens on the landing of every jump. And that's a lot of jumps over a long period of time. And so you can kind of get repetitive stress concussion injuries. So this is a lot of joint stuff or sore feet or everything in the lower limb is related to that, especially in the front feet. Yeah, it's anything sore feet, coughing joint, arthritis, anything like that. We also get, I would say we can get some stress injuries in soft tissue. So we get a lot of suspensory ligament tears or lesions in deep digital, both front and back, I would say. And I don't know, maybe over the span of a long time, it'd be interesting to ask a vet about that, if that's really changing or what. But those are definitely injuries that happen every time that the horses really rock back to push up as hard as they possibly can. all of those sort of structures have to then land and not collapse on the other side. So that those strain injuries can happen. And probably the last piece that I would say we watch for often is just anything related to a weak back that really affects the horse's ability to use their big muscle groups to be able to carry themselves. And then that helps to alleviate all the stress on the things that I just outlined. If a horse doesn't use their body properly, then it stresses all those soft tissue and joints so much harder in the lower limbs.
How do you think posture affects how a horse jumps?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. I would say that it's right up at the very, very top of most important things, because it highlights, it describes how the horse is going to use his body to do this job, how they're going to push, how they're going to carry across, how they're going to land, how they're going to be able to do the next jump that comes up right away, how they're going to fatigue in the middle of the course. If they're fatiguing, what are they going to do to compromise? And then how does that risk something else? I mean, yeah, it never stops. Posture is gigantic. It's a huge part of our program, is discussing it and talking about it and trying to fix it through all kinds of ways, from riding better, training better, physiotherapy, vets, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point, because I think that people oftentimes, you hear it a lot, especially at the lower levels. And I mean, you guys are at the top of your sport, but you know, you hear it lots at the lower levels where they just say, oh, that's old Sally, she never turns left, or, you know, that's old Ginger, she warms out of it. She just, you know, she's just rein lame at the beginning a little bit. And I think people don't realize that that is actually creating forces and problems for their sport further on that day, but also further on down the road.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's, none of that stuff should be, you know, quote, normalized. That is all, those are all the red flags that you should be paying attention to.
Right.
The importance as well of your flat work and developing that posture, where, like Tina said, you guys are at the top of your sport, but for those, especially those, we see it often in the barns with the young girls that are so keen to just get on and jump. They just want to jump so bad. And like you mentioned, the horses have the heart, the will to do it for them. And luckily they're usually just tiny pint-sized little things, so it's not a lot of rider weight, but really the posture that the horses have has not been developed, especially for those school type horses, because those kids just aren't strong enough to develop that. But how important it is, because those are the ones that then do break down significantly, and you do see a lot of issues with because of the lack of the posture. So flat work, you know, just can't be instilled, I think, enough, especially in the young kids, mm-hmm. As they're going, that it's not just boring. It is what you're working towards so that you can get over those larger jumps as you develop.
Yeah. People that look up to you, what would you say to them? How many days a week do you jump, even your big time horses? And what would you say to them about the flat work and conditioning?
Yeah, I don't jump very much. I don't, you know, twice a week is sort of, I don't know, standard. But then when you're in the middle of showing and everything like that, it tends to slow down a little bit because you're spending more time rest and recovery and getting ready and all of that stuff. But in a sort of a long stretch of training, twice a week is good. And we supplement a lot with poles and Cavalettis. We, you know, there's a lot of technical things that you need to work on that is great to imagine, but it's really only useful if there's actually a pole or something that to create the boundary or there's something in the space to work around. And so we do a lot with poles and Cavalettis instead of always jumping. And in terms of motivating people about flat work, it's a tough one. It is a tough one. When you are dealing with kids that are getting into the sport and the next generation of all of this stuff, you know, the sport needs to be exciting, but at the same time, we need to educate people and they need to understand how to keep the sport going around, or how to keep your horse going, or how to keep the horses happy and healthy. And so in a big way, I see it as a shared responsibility, and it's always been a big part of our program and sort of our belief system that the professional keeps up on the flat work a little bit, because it's, as you said, it's unrealistic to think that some of these kids that are learning are going to be able to do all of the right things to fix posture when they're learning themselves and have other things to think about, but somebody needs to. And so being able to back them up a little is good for the horses, and it's helpful for the riders to feel sometimes what it's supposed to be like.
Yeah, that's a really good point, that they can instill that feel into them, like you say.
I think the biggest blessing a young person could get is a trainer that makes the flat work interesting and exciting, because it is where you're going to spend 90% of your time.
Yeah. And that's, people are looking at the flat work as something they have to get through to be able to jump.
Yeah.
Right. And it really isn't. It's really a vehicle for the jumps to be better, easier, and funner.
Right.
I know you guys do work with a lot of young horses and bring them along as well. When you're looking at a jumping prospect, what sort of things are you wanting to see in their natural posture, their natural conformation that would lend them to be great jumping athletes?
I think I'll speak for myself. When I'm looking for an amateur horse for myself, and Alex might look for something a little bit different, but for me, I'm always looking for a great gallop, which means the hind legs are naturally underneath themselves, which already puts them in that uphill natural frame. I know in my own riding, I like to be able to add as many strides as I want or leave them out if I want to. And the only way to do that is with a great gallop. And if they naturally have that, it makes my job a lot easier. And I think the other thing that we both will tell you, it's a bit abstract, is you got to just look at it and like it. You know, yeah. There's something about it that you think, yeah, I could ride that.
Yeah.
And I love that. Unfortunately for us, with our size difference, we often look a little bit for a different thing. But actually, in hindsight, normally he gets them really broke and then I take them after. So, and it's okay. What about you?
I think you can't do better than seeing it in real life. And I get that the feeling and the reaction when you see the horse in real life is based on a lot of things, a lot of experience, and a lot of sort of objective information that sort of makes that snap decision, for sure. So it's not to discount conformation and all of this and that, but I mean, I'm not going to get out a protractor and start to measure angles and make a decision based on that. It is part of what you see when you look at the horse, is to see, oh, that shoulder is very straight or very long, or the hip is this, that, or the other thing, or the straight hind leg. Those are things that we definitely would notice. And as Holly mentioned, you know, for our personal preference, we don't really like them to be that downhill. So, you know, anything within reason, and then it's the overall feel, the overall feeling that you get when you look at it, if you're trying to see it from the ground and know if you even want to sit on it. And then for the rest, it's really, you know, if you watch them move, you get a pretty darn good idea in the walk, trot, canter. You get a pretty darn good idea about how they use themselves naturally. And that's a good, that it normally provides a good instinct to see what it is you've got to work with.
Yeah.
Right. I think a horse can be ridden, you know, sometimes you see someone riding it maybe over bent or something that makes it look a little bit downhill. But when you look at its way of going, you can see a little bit the natural angle of them and how elastic are they? And do they just appear to be an athlete, you know? And if that's the case, and then oftentimes when you get on it, you might ride it in a bit of a different shape or a bit of a different way of going. And then you can see how easily they sort of tune into what you're asking.
Yeah, I think that's great. And that brought a question up for me as you were talking, Alex. How do you build confidence in a jumping horse? Like, is it, you had said that you want to make the jump so easy for them that it's fun. Tell us a little bit about either how you would evaluate a horse for that confidence level, or how you would build confidence in a horse that really is not sure.
When you're trying a horse, you want to get the idea about what the horse volunteers, more or less. You want to know, if you get near the jump, does the horse kind of clue in that they understand what is about to happen, and do they participate? And obviously, if not, then you're going to move on, because, you know, depending on the situation. But if you have a really young horse, that is generally step one, is to have them really understand what these jumping things are all about. And so that's why we do shoot jumping, or we jump small when we're teaching them as, you know, four-year-olds or whatever. And so they understand. And then the next mission, once they understand what to do at the jump, is to fill in all the gaps to make it so that they have more tools at their disposal when they get there. So that's all the flat work stuff. So the building in the elasticity, the balance, the ability to shift weight, the straightness, the, you know, all of the things, being able to have enough power so that when they get to the jump, they just sort of, the jump comes from the canter, more or less. So you don't do anything different because they understand what happens at the jump. And they have more tools at their disposal and they realize, well, that was pretty darn easy. And so that's effectively what you do with a horse that maybe feels a lack of confidence. And this sort of phrase comes up often when people say that they're a horse doesn't like leaving long or whatever. And that's sort of a funny little phrase that it gives you a good roadmap. You have to make it so that your horse has the tools so that they can just, they don't consider it long, short, or they don't get out a ruler, but they just think, well, we leave the ground now because I feel balanced and powerful and whatever, and they just do it.
One of the things that we've heard over and over is don't let the horse know you made a mistake. And I think that speaks to a few things. It means not being emotional in your riding. You know, if you have a bad canter and make a bad decision at a distance to a jump and you get down about it, your horse immediately feels that energy, whether that's at him or at yourself. And so I think that's one of the best things that professionals apply to their training is even when they're a little bit deep or a little bit long or the jump is a little bit spooky or they're in a new scenario, the rider is the constant from an energy perspective and from somebody for them to lean towards. I know that from watching Alex develop horses that I have ridden after, they have such a self-confidence about them and they allow me to make mistakes because they spent so much time with somebody who's just constantly told them, no, it's all right. That was okay. That was a little bit this or a little bit that, but we're just going to go to the next one. And I think people need to let their professionals continue that help, you know, so you don't get down too far down a road.
Yeah, I don't think people think about it that way enough.
Not at all. And I think that pertains to any discipline that whole feeling as a rider of that emotion that you are portraying will be reflected with the horse, regardless of how stoic you're trying to be. If you let it out, it will come through.
Yeah, brilliant. So that kind of takes us into the touchy-feely part. So why did you guys choose show jumping?
For myself, I started at an eventing barn and my best friend moved barns and I followed her and that was to a show jumping barn. And I don't honestly know why she did that, but then that was the path I went down. And then for myself, I ended up riding with a great dressage trainer on a fantastic jumping horse. And we switched over to do some black tack stuff. And then I met Alex and that was the trajectory he was on. So that's why I show jump.
I started as a kid at a local barn, a lesson barn. And I rode recreationally for a really long time, but the impetus to even start that was my older sister loved horses and wanted to try it because of Spruce Meadows. And, you know, my sister and I were born in Calgary. And so it's a great family activity when in the summertime, my parents would take us to go and watch the horses at Spruce Meadows. And eventually my sister was old enough to try it. So off she went and I was dragged along. And when I was old enough to do it, then I tried it. And that's sort of where it all began. I never really had in my mind that I wanted to do any of the other disciplines. I still to this day wonder how cross country people do what they do. It's fascinating. Love to watch that thing from afar, but it's that never really struck me. And I have to say over the course of the years, my understanding and appreciation for flat work and why it's so important has grown to the point that I really enjoy watching dressage. And of course, this is all thanks to Holly too. I mean, I wouldn't know what it is that I'm watching if not for her help too. But it's really taken off and I really enjoy watching dressage and I get a lot out of it. And you know, we've had some great opportunities to ride with really great classical dressage instructor and that has played a huge role in our personal training program anyway. So the cross training aspect comes in, but I was always a show jumper.
I love it. And you guys travel to a lot of shows. What kind of stress does it put on you guys to travel to shows? And second part of the question would be, how do you guys keep your program up when you're going from show to show?
Yeah, traveling can be for me, the most stressful, because I'm so routine based, and just the nature of being at a horse show on a different schedule means I'm out of control of that. And I think for us and for the horses, we try to keep things as normal as possible. And by that, I mean, you know, we keep the feed the same. We keep the exercise length and topic the same. That in itself is stressful. But more than anything, when you have a bad day, you think it's the end of the world. And that seems to be the most stressful. And really, we've been doing it long enough now that you realize not every bad day is the end.
Yeah, I could speak a little bit to the way the program keeps up, and that's it's not easy, I will say that. We have tried various iterations of running our program, and ultimately everything that we do is based around certain competition and the competitive side of show jumping, I guess. It's not that everyone needs to go to the Olympics or Young Riders or whatever it is. But we sort of gear everything towards going to competitions. So we've always tried to have riders that like to do that. And then we try to really make sure that they can all come with us when we go somewhere, if it's at all possible. One thing that is certainly thanks to technology is that now you can do things over Zoom and whatever. You can keep up a little bit over the internet. For anyone that happens to stay home, it's not a substitute, but it's a bridge. And that's quite nice. But in general, in terms of the stress I could speak to, it is stress, but it's why you're doing it. And it's good to get used to it. You have to practice that and dealing with it just as much as anything else. So it's, it's all part of the game, really.
And why do you guys choose to show? I mean, obviously you're wanting to be on the international stage, but, you know, some people would say, you know, well, why do we need shows? Right now we're in the middle of the pandemic. It's no big deal. It's just a horse show. I think there's a lot more to the industry and to sport than just thinking that you're going out to get a blue ribbon. What do shows bring to you guys and add to your program?
I think shows, if you look at it from the horse's perspective, you know, the horses that are showing right now are showing age are, you know, cursed to have been in the middle of this pandemic also, and their careers sort of can't really be put on hold the same way that the riders can, if that makes sense. And for their own progress and development and whatever it is that they could achieve in the sport, it's really hard to have a forced break. That's physically really tough to come back from, and it's really tough sort of mentally for them to get back into the show fitness. So that's a factor, is that it's important for the show horses to keep showing, to stay current. For us, I think there's an element of the business that is true. The business does not exist sitting at home. It does exist at the shows and at competitions and all of those sort of secondary industries that go around it, not just us personally, but there's so many services and all of these things that rely on competitions. And at the end of the day, all of our clients and students and everything, I mean, those who do it recreationally, the recreation is the sport. It's doing it for fun at a competitive level. And so I'm not sure how many people would really stick with it if there were no shows. I don't know. I mean, I really just don't know that.
That is something everyone's struggling with right now in regards to the pandemic and being able to, or not being able to show. It's tough.
Yeah. Stay motivated.
But speaking of motivation, what is it, pandemic aside, what is your biggest motivator that keeps you wanting to do show jumping specifically? Is it the thrill of being able to bring young horses along and watch how they can progress? Is it actually being able to fly through the air? I mean, that scares the heck out of me, so I don't know. But yeah, what is it that really gets you excited about the sport?
I like to show as sort of a checkpoint of where I'm at. And we were talking about this the other day. You know, you can show every week now, but the way we sort of like to do it, which falls in line with the working backwards mentality, is you're going to get ready for this event. It's going to tell you sort of where you're at, and then you're going to go home and do your homework again. And I find getting to the horse show is almost as inspiring as ending the horse show, knowing what you're going home to work on. And it's then it becomes a cycle and you can't get out of it.
For myself, I really, for the past 10 years or so, I've really focused a lot on doing young horses, and I really enjoy that. It's such a palpable progression. Like, you can really see and feel and sense the things as they evolve, and that's really a lot of fun. Getting to do that at shows is great. I think being able to take the horses through their first of whatever it may be is pretty fun and rewarding. And producing them to become a great athlete is a part of the business plan, so to speak. But it's also really, it's super rewarding to do that. And for the big sport, I mean, it is a little bit of a thrill. Like, you stand at the in gate knowing that you're going to do something that's medium crazy, that your blood is going crazy. The horses know exactly what they're there for. Everybody's ready. It's 90 seconds or bust. And like, that's a lot of pressure, and being able to sort of get ready for it, do it, and come out the other side, and hopefully anyway, have done very well, is, there's not a lot like it. The physical act of flying through the air is still the coolest thing.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, I think Alex makes a good point that when you're standing at the in gate, the horses are, I mean, they're incredible when you think of the different sports that they participate in, but the good ones, or even the okay ones, they get it. They know why they're there. They're excited to be there. Even in our sport, you know, they'll ring the buzzer and the horses want to pick up the canter before you've even asked. They know what they're there for. And I think that that feeling is, it's undeniable. It's, you want to come back to that feeling of what you guys are there to do together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that team. I love that.
Anything else you guys want to add?
Yeah, I just had one thing I want to say that I think is been really key to our success is the team of people. People always talk about their team in sort of an abstract way, but I think we have had such amazing people in our lives, and I think that people should build the team around them that they can lean on, you know, from not just coaches, but farriers and body workers and vets and mentors. And, you know, I think no dream is too big, but you need someone to support you, or not someone, but many someones. And I know when we go circle back to fitness and conditioning, I know Tina, with our horses, there's been stuff brewing that we haven't noticed, that you've noticed. And then to have that person or you be able to speak to the veterinarian, and the veterinarian be able to speak to the blacksmith, and that everybody comes together and says, I feel this and I see that, and this is how we're going to make it all bigger and better. But also that those people celebrate your successes as a team when you get there. Sometimes that you can feel so isolated in this sport. And I know Alex and I don't. And that's because of the people we've surrounded ourselves with.
Yeah, that's brilliant to say, because I do think that some people think they're just doing it. And in fact, some clients that I have think that the human is doing it, and if the horse would just get on the program, that would be excellent. It's not even a team with the horse, it's them doing it, and the horse is just the bicycle.
Well, I know it's made us feel supported, and it's made our horses happier and stay sounder and fitter longer, for sure.
Yeah, it can never be reiterated enough. I think I agree with you, Holly, is that team approach, and then recognizing each aspect of each quality that each person brings to that team.
So Holly and Alex, thank you so much for doing this. I think people are going to really appreciate this episode. If they want to get in touch with you, how would people find you guys?
We have a website, greatonfarms.ca, and we're also on Facebook and Instagram with Greaton Farms as our handle.
It's great to talk with equestrians such as the Greatons, who believe in the development of both horse and rider for the longevity of their careers. They shared so many great tidbits of information on what it takes to truly develop these phenomenal athletes. While not negating the exhilaration felt for jumping itself, as with all sport, it's the hours and hours of work behind the scenes, from flat work, conditioning, and through to mental strength, that is crucial. If you'd like to connect with either Alex or Holly further, you can find them through their website at www.alexandergreaton.com, or by email at holly@greatonfarms.ca, or through their social media sites on both Facebook and Instagram under their handle Greaton Farms. We'll have links to all of these on the show notes as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode. We appreciate each rating and review you can give to help grow this podcast. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook under Equine Body Talks, or connect with us by email at equinebodytalks@gmail.com. To learn more about courses by InHand Equine Therapy, please follow them on Instagram and Facebook as well, and their online course platform at inhandequinetherapy.podia.com. Remember to always be an advocate for your horse and not be afraid to open the conversation around your horse's wellness team.